We're so close to the Pentagon. Sometimes they ask us to get the coffee. This is Warbird Radio.
Hey, thanks for tuning in to the all-new Warbird Radio Live channel. We're happy to be back on the air right across from the runway at Washington Reagan International Airport. Be sure and tune in Tuesday nights at 8 p.m. Eastern each week for Warbird Radio Live, followed by a new episode of one of our top-tier shows like the R.C. Scale Builders Show, Hartman and Hines, Over the Front, and the all-new Texas Warbird Report and Wings Over New Zealand Show. Listen, this station is all about community, so please join up with us on Tuesday nights and call in and become part of the fun and part of the family. Thanks again for tuning in, and join us Tuesday nights at 8 p.m. Eastern.
Live from Washington, D.C., this is Warbird Radio.
You are listening to the RC Scale Builder Show on Warbird Radio. Now here is your host, Mike Chilson.
And good evening, everyone. Welcome to the RC Scale Builder Show. Today's Tuesday, August 25th, 2015. I'm your host, Mike Chilson. And I want to welcome you, all of our listeners, to the show, whether you're listening live tonight with us or if you're listening to the podcast, we're glad you could tune in and join us. If you'd like to participate on the show tonight, we'd love to hear your questions and comments. You can do it a couple of different ways. You can call us at 478-787-4768. Skype us at Warbird Radio. That's all one word, Warbird Radio. Or just simply join the show chat by clicking on the Join Us in the Live Chat link under the Listen Live button. Tonight, guy, we got a great show tonight. I brought somebody on who is the Kim Kardashian of scale RC.
Oh boy.
The Snooki of Warbirds, you know. No other way to describe him other than Dino DiGiorgio. Dino, welcome to the show tonight.
Well, thanks for having me back, Mike.
You know,
I mean, I can't believe it.
You know, it's great to have you on the show. You're a regular participant here, but we like having you on because you have so much knowledge. We just want to suck every little drop of it out of that brain of yours. So we're going to try and do some of that tonight. Folks, tonight we're going to be talking about getting into scale competition, and I couldn't think of a better person to do it than someone like Dino, who's been doing it for such a long time and has the perspective of a competitor, and you know, we want to try and get some thoughts from him. I guess, Dino, the logical place to start is, you know, let's talk in general about how scale competition works.
Well, I mean, scale competition works. It's pretty simple how it works. You know, getting there and having the tools to do it, that's part of the conversation. But you know, scale competition is basically you first pick out what type of event. There's lots of scale events out there. There's quite a few. You know, primarily Top Gun, Scale Masters, Mid Julep, and so on and so on. Mm-hmm. Which you can find most of these through other modelers and through the AMA website. But you know, I've typically since the early 90s, since 1991 actually, I started prepping for Top Gun, and I've never competed in a scale competition aside of Top Gun. I've went to the Scale Masters qualifiers and qualified, but I've never actually competed in a Scale Masters. Maybe that's one thing I need to do and get it on my bucket list.
Yeah.
But basically, you know, you pick out a plane that you like, and hopefully the judges like, and you get some documentation. But there's lots of other classes too. I mean, you can fly at a competition and compete just as, you know, for flying points, and not have to go through the static. So it depends on what kind of model you are. If you're a builder and a pilot, if you're just a builder, if you're just a pilot, there's classes for everyone.
Well, let's talk about the classes. Let's break that down a little bit. You know, obviously there are classes for all different levels of competition, from beginner all the way up to, you know, very advanced. Well, let's talk about Top Gun, for instance. That's as good an event as any to talk about the classes. Tell us about the classes that are available at Top Gun for a
competitor. The classes, you know, the classes that are available have changed through the years because, you know, modeling has changed through the years. So Frank Tiano, who is the organizer, he's got to keep the event alive. So he's always trying to think of what can we do to promote the hobby and keep Top Gun alive. I mean, that's basically it in a nutshell. So the main classes at Top Gun have been there since I've started in 92. You know, you've got expert class where there's a builder and pilot in this, you know, which is the same person.
Right.
So you build the plane, you put it through static and you fly it. And then there's a team class, which is a category that's designed or it's designated to be a pilot and builder, and both are allowed to perform the work on the model, but one is classified as a builder, and then you have a main pilot. And then you have what's called the master's class. And the master's class, as well, has been around since 92, since my first year. Mm-hmm. And that's where someone is the builder, but actually has drawn his own plans. So let's say Roy Valancourt from Valley Aviation, or Jim Meister from Meister Scale. These guys would be eligible for that class because it's their design. They created it on paper, Nick Zeroli, such on. Those guys would be able to go into the master's class.
Gotcha. And, you know, obviously, you know, AMA, Scale Masters, and Top Gun have a lower level entry class too. Can we talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, the lower level. Well, you know, it's funny. I don't think I want to even say lower level because I guess let's say entry level.
The entry level
to let's say Top Gun would be the Pro Am AM side, which is you have Pro Am, which is professional, and AM is for the amateur. Those are the guys who really are just getting their feet wet, and it's a great place to go into Top Gun because, you know, you don't have to put the plane through static. If you want to fly and you want to get the feel of what Top Gun's about and be around the guys and see what the whole event is about on a firsthand basis, then you would go into the AM division of Pro-AM, and you bring an airplane that basically all you need to do is provide one photo of the airplane just to show to the judge that it was an actual model of a real airplane. You get 25 points to prove that, or you don't compete. So it's not that there's a static, but there's a 25-point rule right up in the beginning.
Okay.
And then you know, the judges take into consideration that these are newbies, or not even newbies. They're mainly newbies, but they're guys that maybe have competed in the amateur side still, who haven't gotten to the pro class. Right. Now, I may be wrong, but I think, first of all, I know for one thing I'm right, is that if you win the amateur side of the pro class, you automatically go into Pro-Am, the pro division. You can't stay in the amateur and continue to win. So, you know, that's one thing. I also think, and you know, the only one who could really tell the truth on that is Frank Tiano. But I believe, highly believe, that even if you go through a couple of years of the amateur side, if you feel you're good enough to move up into the pro, then he will take that consideration and perhaps move you into the pro class. So it's not that you're going to be stuck in the AM side forever.
Right. And just, you know, there are comparable classes and other types of competition too, like an AMA, they have the Fun Scale, and Scale Masters has a comparable class also. So while we're talking about Top Gun tonight, folks, these are generally, you know, there's minor differences, but all of the competitions generally have similar types of classes. So
right. That's
something to keep in mind.
Yeah, I think the guidelines are pretty much the same. Now, you know, you'd have to check with each competition. Like I said, I can't speak about the other events of competitions because I haven't entered them. So, you know, it just wouldn't be right for me to just assume.
Sure. Well, that's pretty interesting. So So we've talked about the classes, and we've picked out a class for our airplane. And depending on whether let's say that it's expert, okay, because we've built an airplane, well, we've created documentation.
Before we do that, there's still at Top Gun. There's still one other class that I'm familiar with, and then a new class that's coming this year, which I'm not really familiar with because it's new.
Okay.
But they also it's called Unlimited, and Unlimited is a great venue because it's sort of like team. You still have to go through static, but the difference between the Unlimited class is there's no builder of the model rule. Okay, so you can, let's put it this way, it's like the NASCAR. It doesn't matter where the plane comes from. It could cost $5,000, it could cost $500,000.
Yeah.
It's just an open event. But there's a team, you know, there's team members that have to be in team colors, you know, hats and pants and shirts and whatnot, similar to NASCAR. But, you know, there's just no rule on the builder.
So. Okay. That's interesting. And I think you actually competed in that class 1 year, didn't you, or a couple of years ago?
I did compete in Unlimited, a few years back with Gary Prince and his brother and Dominic with a composite ARC Corsair.
Gotcha. Cool. Okay. Well, with all these classes in mind and knowing that the entry-level class, such as Pro-Am Amateur or Fun Scale, depending on whose contest you go to, that you're going to have a fixed amount for your static score. Let's talk about what goes on once you get to the contest and what has to happen. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, in regards to how
it works. We have to make the assumption here that not everyone knows all the different parts of the competition. So we need to talk about the static judging, if that's applicable to your class, and then the flying part of it.
Right. So basically, if you pick, one of those other classes, aside of Pro-Am, let's just keep Pro-Am separate. So Unlimited, anything that has to go through a static, of course, you have a plane that you bring your documentation on. And I think actually the documentation part would be a great segment for another show for somebody else who actually runs that side of the craftsmanship or the judging of the outline. Okay. Maybe I can set you up with Bob Curry or Lenny Bechtold who actually does that type of judging. I think that would be great.
Okay.
But but basically the plane goes through static and there's judges that look at the color, the outline, markings, and all that good stuff against your documentation, and they make notes. And, to be competitive, I'd say, you need to be right now anywhere 97, 96 and higher in a static score, because the static is a big portion that it's the foundation on, how the competition is going to end up. Because you could, even if you get a 92 static and, you have a pilot that can fly 100s across the board,
uh-huh.
you'll never catch the guy with the 96 or 97 static.
Gotcha.
So static plays a big role in it.
Okay. Well, yeah, that's pretty interesting, and you're right. We should probably do a segment just on, documentation and static judging, but, and the rules vary a little bit between the different organizations, but again, what they're looking at is your documentation, the outline, the color matching, the craftsmanship, those kind of things. What tips would you give, just from your experience, general tips would you give about, presenting your model during static judging that might make people more successful?
Well, what I've seen in the past, and it doesn't really pertain to me personally, because I as a pilot, now keep in mind that I primarily am a pilot. As a builder, you would want to bring just enough documentation for the airplane that's required. You don't want to come in and bring 300 photographs of every angle. You don't want to clutter the judges. Now, keep in mind, there's 60 airplanes that these judges are out there, you know, looking at airplanes, and they want to move along. So you bring, you know, the basic needed, depending on what competition is requiring what items. But basically, you have three views, you have some photo documentation, you have color chips, and if there's anything that stands out on your model that would be different than the real one, you have it documented and you let the judges know, hey, listen, you know, please look at this photo. It's on my airplane. Basically, it's like that. And they judge it from 15 feet away. I believe it's 10 or 15 feet away, except for the craftsmanship judge, which is a part of the judging. And he will walk and look all around it within inches.
Gotcha. And that's some great tips about your documentation to keep it simple. Let's move on a little bit now. Let's talk a little bit about the flying part of the competition, because that seems to be, I think, the part that most people get shook up about, so to speak.
It's the main thing of any flying competition.
That's right. So
otherwise we'd be bringing our models to a static display show.
That's right. So along those lines, let's talk a little bit about, you know, picking appropriate routines for your model. Obviously that's a pretty important point that I think people sometimes overlook when they're getting started. Can you expound on that a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, when you pick your model, obviously you do some research on how the plane flies and how it's supposed to be presented as a full scale would. So you wouldn't take a Cessna 182 and do snap rolls.
Yeah.
It sounds stupid, but I mean, that's pretty much the easy way of describing what you do. So, I mean, you would take whatever airplane it is and you do some research, on how it's supposed to fly. I know that sounds silly, but, I've even found myself looking back at some, you know, vintage World War II, because I primarily fly World War II.
Right.
And I'll look at how the planes, how the models, whatever model it was, took off, either off of aircraft carrier or off of grass, off of, you know, different environments. And I study that. And then I explain that to the judges when I bring up my flight schedule, my maneuvers, my lists. And I explain to them, I brief them before on how I'm going to do a particular maneuver, especially if it's a little bit off the wall. Mm-hmm. A loop. Well, that's pretty self-explanatory. But I let them know where I'm going to enter it, where I'm going to exit, and that kind of stuff. So placement is a very big part of, the judges and presenting them with your maneuvers beforehand. At least I think so.
Yeah.
It's been good for me.
Okay. So communication is very important with the judges while you're, you know, flying your routine. Do you generally have a caller that calls your maneuvers for you, or do you do it yourself?
No, it's best that you have a caller. And I
right.
think that I'm not sure if it's a requirement, but since 92, everybody seems to have a caller at Top Gun. And it's much easier that way because, you know, there's a lot of things going on. Oh. And to sit there and give them 10 maneuvers and, you know, you're up there in your third maneuver and some guy's screaming flame out and, you know, a landing emergency or whatever, you can get frazzled within a second. I think that anybody, unless you have a photographic memory, would forget where you were. What, did I just do a loop? Did I just do a slow flyby? Did I do a tank drop? What did I do? Where am I at? So you have a caller that's there that can doesn't do any harm. He can talk to you. He can let you know. I mean, that's what a spotter is. I mean, a spotter is there to watch for other airplanes, keep you safe. So the caller is essentially your spotter.
Right.
So it's clearly mandatory that he's there on the line with you.
Okay. While we're talking about flying, we've got a question from Don Rice in California. He wants to know, do you do any non-standard maneuvers? And if so, what are they when you fly routines?
Well, that, you know, that's a great question. I mean, non-standard maneuvers. Anything I would say, one thing that I failed to mention is anybody who's looking at Top Gun, go to Frank Camera's website, frankcamera.com, and look up the rule book. There's a rule book there in a Word document, and you can upload it, and it has all the information about Top Gun, all the classes, and all the maneuvers.
Right.
So basically, there's a list of maneuvers in the Top Gun rule book that you can do. If there's anything else that's, you know, off the beaten path, then you would check with the head flight judge, whoever it would be that year, because it can vary. Make sure that you're allowed to do that maneuver. And then if they okay it, then, again, you present that to the two judges that are sitting there when you call your list of what you're going to do. So let's say, you know, with the Corsair, we did a machine gun run. So it's self-explanatory. You think you just do a flyby, hit the machine guns, and you get an automatic 10. Yeah, no, that doesn't work that way. What you do is, you know, it has to be a prototypical machine gun pass. No machine gun pass is done straight and level, right, unless you're shooting down in front of you. So you would come at a, you know, come at a 30 or 40 degree angle, shoot the target, and then do a semi steep pullout, prototypical of the real airplane. That would vary in your points. If you do a machine gun pass and it's flat and level and the guns go off, you're probably going to get half of what you would get. So you'd get a 5 instead of a 10. That's a great question. So that's how you would handle something that's not routine, let's say.
Gotcha. So talking a little bit more about the flying routine, generally there's 3 or 4 rounds, correct? Of flying.
There's four rounds of flying, and they take the best 3 out of 4, weather permitting.
Right.
You know, I mean, usually it's the best 3 out of 4. If it's any of the classes with the static, it's the best 3 out of 4 plus the static, I believe.
Right. Yeah, and you know, that's great you mentioned that about his rule book. You can also get the Scale Masters rule book at scalemasters.org and the AMA scale rule book at, of course, modelaeronautics.org, I think is their website. And they all have, you know, all the information you need. Let's talk about practicing now. this. You know, we all, those of us that don't have the golden thumbs like you do, have to practice quite a bit. You know, you're one of the few people I've met that can then pick up an airplane and look like you've been flying it for 5 years, which is just frankly disgusting, to be honest with you. But
that's one way I've heard of it.
I was trying to be nice because we're on the air. So. But
yeah, it's a little freaky.
But aside that, and I know you don't really, I know you do practice some things, but I guess what I wanted to get at here is how important it is to be comfortable with your model before you compete.
It's critical that and that's why I said you pick an airplane that you like. You wouldn't pick an airplane that you don't like and something that you have to fight. I mean, you know, especially if you're beginning, you pick an easy model with, you know, less features. Maybe it's instead of a Beach T-34 with retracts, it is a Cessna 182 or 206 or a fixed gear airplane, where you can get used to flying in the environment and then deal with all the other goodies, bells and whistles that come along with different airplanes.
Sure.
So it's almost like a type rating. You know, in full scale, pilots have type ratings. You know, they all don't just hop in an airplane and fly it. They practice simulator time, and then they get a type rating, and they're allowed to fly that airplane. Well, you pretty much type rate yourself. I mean, you go out, you practice, and then you go to a different airplane because every airplane is going to fly differently.
Yeah.
Size is an issue. Size, weight, engine, power, all that stuff. So.
Well, I know you've seen people show up at these competitions that don't need to be flying sometimes because they haven't flown the plane enough to be comfortable with it. or I know I've seen them at the Mint Julep that way. But that aside, it's just super, super important to be comfortable with airplanes. So you have, unless you're Dino DiGiorgio, you have to practice, you know?
Well, you know, people, yeah, I mean, when I say I practice, I don't go out and practice my routine. I practice every time I fly because right. when I'm flying, you can't notice. I may not talk because it's not something that you normally do and, you know, sit there in the flight line and talk to yourself. You know, boy, that'd be a headline. But no, I mean, you know, when I take an airplane out and I do my slow takeoffs, people think, oh, he's just showing off. Well, no, that's not the case. That's me practicing on how I can make myself better. I want to see how slow I can take off the airplane and get it off the ground instead of full throttle, tail high, 2,000 feet down the runway and say, you know, dude, you could have lifted off, you know, at 150 feet or 200 feet.
Right.
I saw that in when I was in Iowa for an event for the Wounded Warrior Project. You know, I won't name names, but you know, there's some planes that's like full throttle, and it's like, wow, when is he going to lift off? You don't need all that runway. So as a scale pilot, I'm always watching other people fly like that. So, but that's what I do. I mean, I'm not doing it to show off. I'm doing it to improve myself. Approaches, carrier approaches, you know, anything is practice when I'm flying. I mean, yep. That's what I do.
That's a perfect explanation of it. And, you know, that's a great thing or a great way to put it is if you're focusing on working on something on every flight, you're not just, you know, up there drilling holes in the sky. You know, you're actually doing something to prepare yourself if you're interested in competition. So,
right. That's 90% of the time what I'm doing when I'm flying at any event, unless I'm at an air show and I'm there to do an air show routine. Okay.
You know, right.
A specific job, and that's a different story. Then it's not practicing; it's just putting on an air show. But other than that. That's why every time I fly, I'm doing my practice at the same time. I may not be practicing a set of maneuvers.
Uh-huh.
Hey, I mean, you know, it's just, you know, takeoff and landing heading, you know, fast flyby, slow flybys, drop tanks, you know, all that stuff is the same thing. You know, you're practicing as you're doing it, trying to make yourself better. Well, I dropped the tanks. Well, they fell 40 feet off of the center mark. Okay, well, I need to know. I need to drop them a little bit later or past, or, you know, that's
still
part of practicing.
Yeah. That's awesome. Well, one other thing I wanted to kind of tap your brain about tonight was, and I want to put you on the spot here since we're live.
You never.
Well, first of all, let me say in follow up to your practice, discussion there that, one of the greatest things that I like Dino to do when we get to fly together is tell me how I did, because it helps me, I think, to be a better pilot when I mean, I try and do that too. Sometimes I get out there and just mess around, but usually I try and focus on practicing something. And, you know, Dino's actually got me to where I'm doing the carrier landings now, and approaches and landings. I really like that. That's pretty impressive. People like to see that. So, but anyway,
it's definitely a cool maneuver. It's got a wow factor, and I've heard that a lot lately. I mean, within the last couple of months, throughout events that I've traveled to and stuff, it's a maneuver that I'm not going to say mastered, because you know, you can say you've mastered something, but anything can happen.
Sure.
But it's a really cool approach, and it takes a lot to work at it. It doesn't just happen.
Yep, that's right. That's right. And I can't tell you how many times I had to practice to get my circle right on that descent. So, anyway, yeah, great work. And, you know, one of the reasons I enjoy flying with you is I feel like you challenge me a little bit when we fly. So I think that's always a good thing, and that's why I drag you out there with me a lot of times.
You know, if somebody asked me to come out and watch their routine and you know, really not ridicule, but
critique it. Yeah.
If you ask me to do that, be prepared. I'm going to tell you what I like or what I didn't like.
Right.
I mean, you can't take it to heart if you're asking me. I'm going to tell you what's good and what's bad, and what you need to improve on. And hopefully, you do that. You improve on things. I mean, I've watched through the years that I've known you, and you definitely have gotten a lot better. Not saying that you were crap to begin with, but that's what you asked me to do.
That's right. That's right.
And hopefully that will rub off. I mean, I've got a gift. If I was born with it, great. But, I can't give that to somebody. I can only teach them as best as I can without doing it myself. It's very hard to train somebody exactly the way you can do it, because it comes so naturally for me I can just do it. But I will tell you how it needs to be done, and I will – look at certain aspects of whatever you want me to look at, and we can improve on that.
Absolutely. Don Rice has got another question. Why don't you describe for people what the carrier approach is? What that maneuver
basically
is?
Basically, a carrier approach, I mean, you have multiple ways of approaching any runway, depending on your airplane. But a carrier approach is what it sounds like. Carriers, they were very close, tight circle, 180-degree circle, and it's a low-level approach. They didn't start from 400 feet and dive straight down. It was a very low approach, especially depending on weather. I mean, back in World War II, you got handed what you got. I mean, crap weather, carriers going up and down. You have the LSO waving up and down, left, right. So basically, I envision myself, even though I'm landing on grass or pavement, to me, it's a carrier. So I would do a low-level approach. It would be a hard bank, maybe a 25-degree bank, and then it's a 180-degree circle all the way down without losing a lot of altitude, except for when you're turning. So basically, your turn from your downwind into your base is all one, and into the final approach is all one. Basically, your right wing is still low to the ground as if it would touch. You flatten out, and then you touch down. So
right.
it's a very tight, close, steep banking maneuver that you have to adjust your airspeed, your flaps, and all that through that turn and making it look good. You're not like you're letting go of the sticks, because it's a flight all the way to the ground. It's not like you're coming in straight where you can let go of the sticks and say, okay, I can bring the power back. It's a one-shot deal.
Right. You're literally flying it to the ground. Yeah.
Literally flying it to the ground.
Yeah. And it's not a very difficult thing. That, like you said, the most difficult part of the maneuver is, getting your power, your throttle, and your descent right,
Yes, because all your airspeed and when you drop your flaps and your gear and all that, you have to maintain that momentum going all the way around. And as you're doing that, you've got to be prepared to, okay, am I too fast? Am I too slow? Am I just right? Because it's a one maneuver that you don't let go of. So if you're too fast, you're going to overshoot the runway.
Yep.
So your airspeed is critical when you're doing that. And, you don't want to be too slow. You don't want to be too fast. You have to be right on.
Yeah. What I've been doing with it is coming in over the runway at about 70 feet, maybe 60, 70 feet, slow with flaps right down and gear down. And I just basically do a descending circle to the runway.
Right.
And just keeping power the whole time. Yeah, I mean, and you taught me that maneuver, and I love it. I fly my Zero, and it does that maneuver extremely well. But anyway, let me put you on the spot about something here. We kind of got off track here. I want you to give me three tips for someone who's getting started in competition. The three best tips you can think of for someone getting started, what would they be?
Three best tips. Oh, I guess I would have to say, Yeah, that's putting me on the spot. I'm not good under pressure. But I would say the most crucial tip that I would say to anybody who wants to go into competing is try and find somebody who will lend a hand and walk you through it.
Yeah.
That's the main thing because it's like starting, starting flying, you know, without somebody to teach you the basics, you can build an airplane, fly it once, crash it and get discouraged. Okay. And I use that, as an example. So, if you have somebody that like myself or Mike Barbie, I mean, there's DJ Ash, there's so many guys out there who would be willing to help. Find them if they're in your local club. If not, maybe at an event, you guys can meet up and go over everything. I think that's the main key, is to find somebody to give you a helping hand.
Gotcha. Well, Dino, will you stick around a minute? We need to take a quick commercial break, and we'll come back and continue the discussion. But folks, stick around. We'll be right back after these messages with more of Dino DiGiorgio and the RC Scale Builder Show.
We're so close to the Pentagon. Sometimes they ask us to get the coffee. This is Warbird Radio.
Hey, thanks for tuning in to the all-new Warbird Radio Live channel. We're happy to be back on the air right across from the runway at Washington Reagan International Airport. Be sure and tune in Tuesday nights at 8 p.m. Eastern each week for Warbird Radio Live, followed by a new episode of one of our top-tier shows like the RC Scale Builder Show, Hartman & Hines, Over the Front, and the all-new Texas Warbird Report and Wings Over New Zealand Show. Listen, this station is all about community, so please join up with us on Tuesday nights and call in and become part of the fun and part of the family. Thanks again for tuning in, and join us Tuesday nights at 8 p.m. Eastern.
Live from Washington, D.C., this is Warbird Radio.
You are listening to the RC Scale Builder Show on Warbird Radio. Now here is your host, Mike Chilson.
And welcome back to the RC Scale Builder Show. Tonight our guest, Dino DiGiorgio, is with us, and we're all talking about getting started in scale competition. And I can't think of a better person than Dino to get on here and talk about that, since he is I'm going to toot your horn a little bit for you. He's won 7 times at Top Gun, and he's a fantastic flyer, and he's one of those disgusting people that you see that can just pick up an airplane and look like he's been flying it for 10 years. Incredible. But
don't hold that against not my fault.
You know, I've already told your wife Kim that if you ever pass away, I want your brain and your thumbs. That's all I want.
Well, you probably just want my thumbs.
Well, that's cool. Well, hey, look, couple of quick questions before we continue on. Let's see here. One of our members, Servo Loco, asked, are photos really an advantage for your documentation? That can kind of be answered several different ways, but I'll let you take a stab at it.
Yeah, keep in mind that I am not the expert in a documentation book. However, I think photos are, it's not an advantage, I think it's a necessity. You need to have some photo documentations of the airplane to show placement of markings and such. So it's definitely a necessity.
Yeah, but you don't want to go overboard with it.
No, you don't want to go overboard. You just want to highlight any like special unique piece of your particular model. Okay, that would be different than the norm. Where a craftsmanship judge will look at it and say, "Well, something's wrong there," and you say, "No, that's because of X, Y, and Z." Okay, I mean that's the kind of stuff that you have in your documentation. So.
Right. Okay, here's another one. This is actually a good question, because I think this is a perception a lot of people have, and I'd like to hear how you answer it, because I think it's a good question. Matt Wicks wants to know, will you score less flying a routine with a Cessna 182 than you would with a Pitts S2 just because of the maneuvers?
Well, Hey, Matt, great question. And while I'm not a flight judge, I would certainly like to say no, absolutely not. Okay, it doesn't matter what type of airplane you bring, as long as your maneuvers that you do are prototypical of that airplane. Okay, you get guys who fly World War One. I mean, there's basically no frills on World War One. You have four controls. I mean, you know, throttle and aileron, elevator and rudder. That's it. So, you know, it doesn't get more basic than that. You know, with a Cessna, you may have brakes. You may have, that's not really an option, but it works part in realism. You know, you have flaps or something like that. So, no, I mean, you know, flying a Cessna or a civilian airplane is definitely not a lesser advantage than something more complex.
That's a great answer. And that seems to be a prevailing, you know, view, I think, of a lot of people who don't compete.
All right. Here, you know what? Great example. Matt, I'm gonna prove this theory wrong for you 100%. Now, it was a couple of years ago, I had a car Corsair with Hines. It was in the British Navy scheme, okay? Now, it was a new airplane for us. We had engine problems, no excuses. We had really good flight scores. Our first round, we couldn't even get the airplane off of the ground. It wouldn't even take off because of the wrong pitch on the propeller, yada, yada, yada. So we blew that round. So that was a throwaway. Now all the pressure's on because the next three flights have to be good enough to place. So we did that, and Mike Barbie beat us with his Piper Cub. So there you go.
Yeah, yeah. That's true. I was there that year. That's right. Yeah. That's a fantastic, you know, way to drive your point home on that, for sure.
If it wasn't for that stupid onboard starter that Barbie had, that was the maneuver that he did, and he wowed the judges with it.
Yep.
And he got a good score. I mean, he took the plane up, shut it off, flew by, started it back up. I mean, it was great.
Yeah.
It was cool, no doubt about it. But there you go.
Okay, here's another question for you. This one is from Don Rice. Let me see here. So many to pick through here. What are your thoughts on having K factors assigned to flying maneuvers in judging? What do you think of K factors?
I don't think of K factors.
Okay.
Basically, I don't know if I understand because I'm not sure I even know what K factor is.
Well, my understanding of it is it's a rounding process of the scores. Now I could be wrong about that, but we can certainly get someone on here to talk about that.
Yeah, there you go. I mean, as far as the scoring goes, you know, you know what it is going into it, regardless. And
yeah.
It's equally scored. Everybody has to do the same thing.
Right.
So if you're not prepared, yeah, I mean, if you're not prepared, like we weren't 100% prepared with the Corsair. I mean, I flew it. Everything was great. But we were trying to do some things that changed it. It didn't work out. So we blew around. I mean, anything could have happened in the next two rounds, and instead of second place, I may not even have placed.
Yeah.
So, but, you know, that's the luck of the straw. I mean, you basically, everybody's dealt the same cards, and you need to be prepared and go through all the rounds, and that's it. I mean, you know, that's just the way it goes.
Right.
Question, Don.
Yeah, I think, you know, IMAC uses that scoring system, and I think the Scale Masters tried it 1 year at the championships. I'm not sure how well it was received or not, but there's, you know, it's just a little bit different way of, I think it normalizes the scores is the idea behind it, but I couldn't comment one way or the other if it's good or bad.
Yeah, it's an interesting question that I don't have an answer to because I don't have any knowledge of it. So
right, yeah, because it's just now being, I think, talked about some in the skill competition community. And I think generally speaking, it's not being very well received. But you know, who knows what will happen in the future. But anyway, that aside, well look, we've had some great discussion tonight, and I'm sure everyone appreciates you coming on and talking about your experience being a competitor. And how many years have you been competing now?
I started prepping for my first Top Gun, which was 92. So basically, 91 was the first year that, you know, back then the guidelines to enter Top Gun were a little bit different. You had to compete in three major competitions and place in the top five of those three in order to get an invitation. But you're talking 1992.
Yeah.
So 91, I was out. I had a Byron pit special that had a Quadri 50 in, and I went all over. I mean, I lived in New Jersey. I was in Florida, Tangerine. You know, there was a couple other events in Sarasota and whatnot that I went to get my invite to go to Top Gun in 92. 92 was the first year that I entered in team scale.
Well, there you go. There you go. And you've been at it ever since, right?
Been at it ever since, yeah, 92 until this year. And I missed you this year. It was a very special year for us.
Yeah, I know. I wanted to come down, but you know how work gets sometimes. So, well, look, real quick before we go, I would be remorse if I didn't ask you what's going on with Meister Scale these days. You got anything new, new products coming out or that you've released since the last time you were on the show?
Yeah, since we spoke last, we released the quarter scale P-47,
right,
which is a 122-inch wingspan. The kit is on the website, and we're you know, slowly adding some items to it, and it's already proven to be a winner. It took first place at Top Gun in the amateur side with Aaron Stewart, who flew it. So we're very happy about that. It's a just fantastic flying airplane. And so we're excited about that. And we're working on a couple other projects. As you know, we're working on a KI-61 Tony, 104-inch and then 85-inch for, you know, maybe some electric guys who want something different.
Yeah.
So we're working, and we got a couple other projects in line. Hopefully soon we're going to be releasing a 101-inch T6 Texan, glass views, built-up wing and tail. So, yeah, we got a couple things going on.
That's awesome. That's good to hear. Yeah, that Texan I think is going to be a neat airplane. Get it when it gets done. So
loving it, then, Jay.
Yeah, yeah, very cool, very cool. Well, Dane, I can't thank you enough for coming on the show tonight. We're hard to believe we've ate up almost an hour here already.
Yeah, time flies.
But will you come back and talk some more? Maybe we can talk a little bit more about getting people's flying routine set up, and maybe we'll get you back and talk about that some more.
Yeah, would love to.
Okay, super, super duper. Are you going to be at any events anytime soon or anything you want to promote before we?
Yeah, absolutely. I will be attending Warbirds Over the Rockies, and that's coming up September 11th, I believe.
Okay.
And so that's a great, great event. Brian Amara puts on a fabulous show. If you are in the Colorado area, or if not, book a flight and go out there. If you haven't been there, you'll love it. You can go to warbirdsovertherockies.com.
Okay.
And then I'll be taking a little break. I've got my wife and I, our anniversary and birthdays line up, on the 23rd and 24th. So we'll be in New Jersey with family, but then, on the way back, we'll be going to, the Rally of Eagles, October 8th through the 10th at Mac Hodges Field. So we'll be there.
Okay.
And then definitely we'll be at Frank Tiano's event, which will be Warbirds and Classics.
Uh-huh.
the weekend after in October. And then November 5th through the 7th is my father's memorial event in Bull Ground, Georgia, with the Georgia Model Aviators Club.
So, great event. Great event. I look forward to to going to that again this year. So. Well, super. Well, you know, it's always a pleasure to chat with you, and I know everyone appreciates you coming on the on the show. They're actually thanking you in the show chat for coming on.
And well, I appreciate all the emails and whatnot. Hopefully, we can get some callers in too sometime. And
yeah,
you know, that's here for. There's no dumb questions. There's only dumb answers. So please, keep the questions coming.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, look, thanks a lot, Dean, and we'll be talking to you real soon, friend, okay?
All right, guys, take care. Thanks.
All right, see you later.
Bye-bye.
All right, folks, that was Dino DiGiorgio, going over how to get started in competition. There's so much to talk about there. It's incredible. I mean, that could be a four-hour show. But that was just kind of a little taste to get you started. I'll be posting some links to the various rule sets for the different events in the U.S. And if someone's listening in Europe and you'd like to post some links to possibly the rule book for whatever organization you belong to in Europe or Australia, or wherever you are in the world, South America, whatever, we'd love to have those. So be on the lookout for that. Also, don't forget that if you're a site supporter or a lifetime site supporter, be sure and check out our post and win contest this month on the homepage. Basically, all you got to do is post a legitimate question, and you have a chance of winning one of Chad Veach's awesome vinyl rivet detailing kits, which is an incredible giveaway that Chad has donated to the site. So be sure and check that out on the homepage. And also don't forget, as traffic starts picking up through the fall here, be sure, if you haven't ever read them, be sure and read the site rules and the posting tips and tricks at the top of every forum listing. There's some good tips in there for you. If you're new to the site. And last but not least, if your club is hosting a scale competition or fly-in, you can contact me directly offline on the site by using the Contact Us form or PM me via my admin account and let me know. And if you're a site supporter, we'll put a banner up on the homepage for your event. So be sure and check that out. Matt, you around, buddy?
I am around.
Man, he stretched it out tonight.
He was a little long-winded. I want to say a special thank you to Mike Martin on your site.
Oh, yeah?
He's listening as he is deployed right now, I think, or somewhere overseas.
Well, we're glad you're listening.
From up there in Rhode Island, yeah. Absolutely. I don't know if he's listening tonight. He's probably asleep.
Well, maybe he'll listen to the podcast.
We can only hope. Hey, I'm going to send you that poster. That was funny. It took me a second to realize you're talking about the 360 overhead approach.
Yeah.
And one of the organizations that I'm a member of, EAA Warbirds of America, they have a great poster on the 360 overhead approach, which is the safest approach you can fly in a lot of aircraft, including vintage military airplanes, which we all know and love. And it's the approach that I fly every time I land with the Chipmunk. And you know what's funny about that approach? You were bringing this up. I learned how to fly that approach back in Corpus when I was growing up flying models. And we learned because that's how the Navy lands, but more importantly, the wind's always blowing down there. 20, 30 knots is not uncommon, and that's kind of an average day. So if you land that direction, and now for the model guys, it's not going to work at every field, but if you have a crosswind, that approach keeps your wing down and into the wind the entire time. And that was, to me, and it keeps your nose down, so you have less of a chance of stalling a model. And I'm sure we've all seen that video of the Corsair that augured in. You know, it totally could have been prevented had he been flying that approach. So, man, I'm like you. I'd encourage anybody to learn that approach.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's stabilized. You stabilize the airplane at that point. And it's just so many pluses. The cool thing about it that we do, I come over at 1,000 feet, just to keep numbers round for this sake, come over at 1,000 feet at a speed that I can make the field at any point. So for my Chipmunk, it's around 120 knots. And then I pitch to my flap safe speed, in the brake. So as I brake, I'm actually climbing to flap safe speed, dropping the gear, in your case, putting the flaps down, open the canopy, and then that stabilizes me as I come all the way back around.
Yeah. Well, you know, the thing I noticed is exactly what you said is, you know, once you get into that turn, that descending turn,
you can't stall an airplane off if the nose is down, you know,
that's right.
You know, the B-17 that I had, the model, I landed the same way. I landed my P-47 that you have now the same way. And it's just a much easier approach when you learn how to do it. And it's much easier on the aircraft. So,
you know, it's funny. I was doing that with my Zero in Tuscaloosa at a fly-in earlier in the year. And I did a couple of those. And a guy came up to me and he said, that's probably the most realistic landing I've ever seen a warbird do. And I'm like, yeah.
If you're by yourself and we're going into the winter months, so the winds are going to be changing direction. If you're out flying by yourself and you got to make a left break or a right break, man, it doesn't matter. Make it right for the wind.
That's right. Absolutely.
Great. If there's nobody out there.
Yeah. Exactly.
You know, don't want you flying over the pit. But that's good stuff. Sure.
Well, guys, appreciate everyone listening tonight. And if you're listening to the podcast, try and join us live 1 month. We'd love to have you on the show. And by all means, stay tuned here to Warbird Radio for more fantastic warbird-oriented programming.
And I'm going to announce what I'm building next month, Mike.
Oh, you are?
Winter. I'm going to announce my winter project for next month.
Yeah. Is it going to be like last year's paper airplane?
It may be. No, it's going to be. I'm flying stuff. I don't know what I'm going to build. I'm going to build something this year.
Are you really?
I am. I'm going to build something this year.
I think you should build a model chipmunk.
No. I already got the big one. Can't afford it either. Take care, bud.
All right. Thanks for listening, folks. And you always crack me up before I have to do this. You know that? So that's going to wrap up another episode. I hope you all enjoyed the show, and we'll be back next week with another great interview.
Next week? You're going to be back next week? Okay.
Next month with another great interview.
We're regressing.
Can you tell I copy and paste this?
I know, right? Good on you. I'll have you back anytime.
Yeah, well, be sure and join us next month, and we'll let you know what's going on in Scale RC. And thanks for listening. And be sure and stay tuned for more great programming here on Matt Jolly's Warbird Radio.
And what the hell, measure twice and cut once, right?
How about we cut once and measure twice?
You can do whatever you want to do, buddy. You're still the site director, so you do whatever you want. I'm going to call him this week, and we're on public record now.
Oh, okay. I've got it recorded now.
Sorry, Miss Katie. Good night, everybody.
Night, everyone.
Do you really want to end it now, Mike, or you just want to keep going?
I don't know. You know, I was kind of leaning back in the chair thinking about what else we could talk about. Yeah. But, you know, maybe we should just go ahead
now. Okay. You sure? Last chance.
Yeah.
Okay.
I guess so.
All right. Sure you want to end it?
See.